As spiritual seekers, what is our deepest aspiration? Noble wisdom that is far from the dust and confusion of the world. And that wisdom is within us. We trust that, taking refuge in the Buddha's own awakening. So if we get deflected by worldly aspirations, then our energy will run out to other currents. And those currents sidetrack us. We only have to look at the direction we're going and see I'm not on course. If we get so off course, the distance from what we love and cherish will become painful to us, and we will be discouraged. So we examine the way back to the path, to begin again, to return to what we deeply value and aspire for. This is what happens when you're lost at sea. You get out the map and you try to figure out where you are, and you turn your boat and set yourself back on course. I know what that feels like. Before I became a nun, I was an avid sailor. I've been out at sea, and I've been lost at sea, and had to find my way back. I actually did a transatlantic crossing, and we were chased by a hurricane. We went way off course, and we managed to tack our way back. So in the Dhamma sphere, we can tack our way back to the Eightfold Noble Path. Tacking means you can't go straight into the headwind, so you sail to one side of it and then you turn to the other side of it, like to northeast and southeast instead of going directly east. We set our heart on it and we find a place from which we can have a cool, refreshing pause, a rest, to sustain us. This is how our focus can direct us to our highest intention, our most noble direction, to free ourselves from all delusion, from greed, from anger, from frustration, from ill will, from ignorance, from all kinds of suffering. People will tell you, wow, that's very selfish work you're doing. But actually, by rescuing ourselves from the ignorance and delusion of our worldly pursuits and activities, we make way for others to do that too. We enable that wisdom to grow in the world, because others will be encouraged also. It's like creating a trail in the jungle. If we clear a trail in a deeply overgrown area, then other people will find it and follow it. So we have to be brave, like pioneers, not expect it to just be cleared for us. No one will clear a trail for us. We have to do this ourselves. It's up to us to examine at every step, what am I looking for? Where am I going? How do I keep my feet on the trail? How do I keep my balance? How do I persevere? In that going forth through the wilderness, what does the mind do? What am I learning? What am I gaining from this? How does this propel me forward? Put one foot in front of the other. Figuratively, that's what we do when we sit in front of the shrine. And it doesn't have to be a shrine. We could be meditating on the way back from work, in the car, or on the bus. Really, the shrine is in the heart. The temple is in the heart. Giving up the computer or even your cell phone. How many days can we spend apart from this thing? How much does it occupy our attention? Right effort, the right use of our energy, is a huge component of this commitment. Without it, the path will get overgrown so quickly, just like the grass after a rain. We have to keep the path, the trail, clear of weeds. All these gadgets, all these distractions, sometimes these things can really be important. Serving others instead of distracting ourselves with the state of the world. Practicing kindness, random acts of kindness, of goodness. Yes, develop those qualities. There are many ways to use our energy for the sake of our highest aspiration, and these ways are based on the precepts. And when we practice mindfulness and clear comprehension, we directly encounter those obstacles in the mind where we're clouded and dull. We don't realize, we don't know these things for what they are. But when we have clarity of understanding, we can name them and cut them right there in their tracks so they don't deflect us from our deepest aspiration. There's a certain vigilance and diligence required in that. So when we sit down to practice and the mind is watching the breath, then suddenly you remember something that happened in the morning or a few years ago. Just the memory of that might bring rage. We were just sitting quietly, and suddenly the mind is on fire with anger. How do we deal with that? That's where mindfulness and clear understanding come to the fore. To know anger as a poison and to abandon it. We know that it's arisen, and we let it go. We don't cling to it. We don't feed it. We don't stoke it with more remembering. We just use that sword of wisdom that cuts it, because it's just a thought. It's a powerful thought. It's an inflammation of thought. But at its root, it's transient. No matter how inhospitable, insidious, or abominable, whatever emotion might be moving through, it's an emotion. But we should not harbor that. Don't give those emotions or those thoughts shelter. They are not a refuge. They are not a place of abiding for this mind. And we have to see that, to understand the danger and to see the escape from it. And the escape is to know it there, to guard the mind by cooling, turning away from, renouncing, relinquishing these unwholesome thoughts or feelings or mind states. Abandon them. Turn the mind immediately to that which supports the highest in us. What will bring us non-anger? Present moment awareness. Remembering the Buddha. Recalling the qualities of the Buddha. Remembering the breath. And remembering the possibility of waking up to the truth of what we are. We are not this anger. It's just a thought in the mind, impermanent, suffering, and it's empty. It's also not who we are. It's truly empty, and the only power that it has, it's our clinging to it, our own listening to it. Why is that? Because if we pay attention to it, it gets bigger. It's like feeding the monster. It blows up into justifications for why I should be angry. But there's no one to be angry. The truth is so available for us to see. Who is angry? Right there in reflecting on the emptiness of this being, the ego will never be enlightened, and the ego will never be angry because there is no such thing as this ego. And this we have to investigate to promote this kind of sharp, clear comprehension based on mindfulness that is diligent, alert, and continuous. This is not casual. It's not shallow. It's penetrating to inform consciousness. Not this, not that. Again and again and again, we pick up what supports the best in us. We abandon what does not. That's easier said than done. But this focused, sublime effort is noble. It's courageous. It's heroic to sail across a huge ocean, to take a risk, to be open with that which is unknown. You step out into the unknown. You don't use anger or grief or sorrow or disappointment or any of those things that we keep going back to because they make us feel alive. No, we don't take refuge in that stuff. We take this bare course of being in the present moment and letting go the past. There is no future. I have just one breath. That is my boat, and in it I set sail. I have to tack in a big wind. When there's a wind of anger or of resentment or of jealousy or greed, a wind of pleasure or joy, I'll just stop there. Wait a minute. If you have an ocean to sail, you're going to stop and enjoy this little port? How will you ever get out into the vast sea by waiting to discover the treasures there that await us are beyond all these flimsy, pale, impoverished things that we want? The world very much approves of us staying in the harbor, but we have to starve the hindrances and make them shrink. Shrink them and they will reappear again and again until we reach the threshold of safety in this realm. That's entering the stream of the noble ones. It gives us true refuge. we will never again believe so much in all the delights of the world. We'll give up the view that there is any solid self. That self-view dissolves. We give up the belief that rites and rituals can free us, and we will never again doubt the refuge in awakened wisdom, that which the Buddha accomplished to free us and raise up the vision of the Dhamma within us completely. So we follow those great ones who have fulfilled the path and understood the depths of this teaching. And this is the strength of spiritual friendship. The Buddha called it 100% of the path. At first, we rely on our spiritual friends, but eventually, we find our own way. We can be quite alone on the path, and we are our own deepest ally. That's when we understand our own Buddha nature within us and the Buddha wisdom that matures within us becomes a light and shines on the path, leading us onward, leading us inward until we never tire on the way, until we accomplish it. No matter what, we could lose everything in this world, even our life, but we would not give up this way of practice, this refuge, this work. We would not be distracted from it because it is more precious than anything. But we just have to come open-heartedly with palms together, receiving whatever we receive, even if it feels like a dagger. We receive the pain of it, impermanent, painful, not who we are. We know this is not myself, this is not me. And any uninvited, unwholesome qualities that are knocking down the door into the mind, we guard against them. We are diligent and mindful, but they try. Their job is to break down that door. They just keep trying. They are actually our friends, because if those kilesas, those defilements of the mind, didn't keep dogging us, we would never keep running towards Nibbana. So we persevere and endure. We can endure much more than we realize. And we keep re-examining what is the weather in the heart and what are the tools that we are using to protect us. And we see the results of those efforts, checking the state of the mind again and again. We balance it. So how do we use the strength of our mind? How do we learn to be one-pointed on the path, to develop the qualities of loving-kindness, compassion, empathy, and balance, a patient endurance? Patience, the highest austerity. To be patient even when things are not going well, we follow the map, the Buddha's guidelines. Mindfulness, present moment, awareness, gentleness, virtue, committed we are, and vigilant. We begin to experience the exhilaration of insight intuitively. It breaks through the veil of ignorance. It breaks through our pride and conceit. Gently, patiently, humbly, we keep using the tools that Buddha has given us. with our palms together, these gifts come. We ripen the parami, the perfections of virtue and of goodness in the heart. And the barriers to enlightenment are worn down, they wilt, just by putting in the causes and conditions to perfect our virtue, our generosity, our determination, our effort, our clarity, our renunciation, our giving up of selfishness, leading the way is loving kindness, a steadiness of effort and balance that enables us to stick to the work against all odds, to let go all that hinders us and gather the strength to persevere, developing these qualities that will enlighten the mind, to purify the heart, so we can receive the gift of awakened wisdom. This is a preparation for the fruit ripening on the tree, to respect and honor the process deeply, humbly, joyfully. Remember to keep on investigating the states that we're experiencing. This is vimamsa, investigation. To see the qualities of mind that we have developed and those that we are developing further. If it's greed or impatience, we let it go. We dissolve it. We bring forth patience and practice that. We test our mettle, overcoming the poorer, weaker mind states. Life is a constant spiritual test, but we don't protest. We just acknowledge and receive these tests. Even if we feel shredded, we put the pieces back together with our mindfulness, with our satisampajanya, mindfulness and clear understanding, with this wisdom to see this is not me, not who I am. So the test is just like a fire that we have to extinguish, the fire of greed, the fire of hatred, the fire of delusion. We put it out and we illumine the mind in that way. That gives us clarity, true clarity. Seeing and examining where we are in this process, wisely reflecting, we break through the bonds. We feel the joy of the path of awakening. What an honor. What grace. What a gift. Until we completely uproot the impurities of the heart, then let us be excellent in our virtue, to purify these old habits, to let go, to abide in kindness and gentleness. How do we treat others? How do we treat ourselves? How do we care for each other, for the world, for the path, for the mind, for the awareness of the heart?